Great. Well, thank you all for coming on the tour today. This is a special site. We have Liz Baxter here, who actually owns two properties here along the shoreline, and so it's somewhat unique, and we have about 200 feet of shoreline in which a restoration project was taken on. So we have here, you know, we don't really have the pre-existing conditions, so let me just kind of describe to you what we had before. We had a concrete and wood vertical bulkhead on the south property that really had some pretty poor access, actually none at all, and had some, you know, I think about 2 feet of water during the summertime at the edge of the bulkhead, and so it poses somewhat of a problem for children, which, you know, Liz has a couple kids, so there's certainly some safety concerns that were there, as well as the environmental, you know, concerns that we talked about this morning in our presentation. This side of the property had a lot of concrete rubble along the shoreline to protect as a bulkhead. And this area that we're standing in here was actually about our head level, back to the wall here. And so you had a bulkhead that went out here, or land that went out here and dropped off at the water's edge. And so with Liz's, you know, encouragement and desire to improve a lot of the shoreline use, you know, we helped Liz and her family develop a plan that improves the lake access and improves the environment in which we can access the shoreline and enjoy the water, but at the same time do a number of things to help with the aquatic habitat and the upland habitat that we talked about as well, including keeping some of the native conifers intact. That we had some protection measures in which we really try to stay away from the root structures to allow these trees to stay in place, and to incorporate some woody debris, some wood log structures out in the water, which we can see in a little bit, to improve that habitat. Improve some of the gradient out in the water so that the wave action is dissipated as it comes in, so it reduces the amount of erosion that's taking place on shore. And then, like I said, we've lowered certain areas of the property to gain better access to the water, but at the same time to decrease the amount of erosion and wave energy that's occurring. There's a number of special features that maybe Liz can kind of elaborate on a little bit in terms of what's been done in the upland areas, but a lot of our focus on habitat has been with planting native vegetation in the upland area. We've got a pretty good band of native vegetation, varying widths, so that it provides that, you know, habitat for wildlife, as well as good overwater cover and nutrient inputs to the water. So, bear with the boat noise off to the side, but one of our recreational uses on the lake. So with that, maybe Liz, you can kind of elaborate on some of the, you know, rationale of getting this whole thing started in terms of what was happening in your mind and your family's mind to start this process.
Well, first of all, I can tell you that working with the Watershed Company was actually a great pleasure. It was quite an education for us, and they were just really a good team. We put together a great team of contractors. You know, doing a project like this is pretty massive, and it gets complicated, and, you know, you're going to occur problems. And finding a group of people that you can work through the problems with is the best thing you could hope for, because, you know, you try to go down the right path, but then as you start to dig holes in your earth, you're going to find things that you didn't think you would encounter. And so you have to sort of be prepared to realize that things are going to evolve, and it kind of creates its own shape sometimes. For us, the things we were trying to achieve is we had this concrete bulkhead that was just falling apart. We had a sinkhole in our yard, and the wave action was basically smacking against it so hard it was just sucking out underneath and dropping what little yard we had down into the water. The concrete bulkhead also had these large bolts that were sticking out, and there used to be these wooden belly boards along it, and with two little kids, it was just a tetanus shot waiting to happen, so we really wanted to get rid of it. There was a little concrete sort of alcove. I don't know what the purpose of it was, but there was no stairs or a gradual access into the water, so you had to hop over this concrete thing. And in the middle of it was our sewer line. All these homes are gravity-fed sewer line into a main line that runs along the bottom of the lake here. And so our sewer line was exposed. Again, another tetanus shot waiting to happen. Big old, you know, iron lead pipe just sticking out. So we wanted to cover that up. We wanted to fix the sinkhole. We wanted to dissipate the wave action. We wanted to create a safer environment for our kids to get in and out of the water. The other problem we found with the concrete bulkhead is when we were in the water, when the waves came along, like I said, would just smack against the side of it. And if you're standing there, and I'm a pretty solid person, I tell you, it would knock me back sometimes. And I have little kids, and they would just get sucked right under or pushed against the concrete bulkhead. And it was kind of creating a dangerous situation. I also have three large dogs who love the water, and for them getting in and out of the water was also tricky. Two of them are elderly, and so, you know, they, after hopping out all the time, you know, eventually they weren't walking the next day. So it was, we wanted to make a safer environment. Plus, we wanted to get rid of this wave action, because sometimes the waves would come all the way over into the yard and just tear up anything that we had. So the plan was, to get gradual access, to create an environment that kind of had its own little sort of areas that you could kind of escape to. We call this area our little sanctuary, because when you're down in here during the day or at night, it's just quiet, it's peaceful. We see little muskrats and otters swimming by. Since we've done this, we've seen turtles and all sorts of stuff I've never seen before just along the shoreline here. So that's been really exciting for us. The initial idea, we were going to sink the whole yard down about 7 feet, because we were trying to find a level yard. But we realized that taking out these big trees, who have been here longer than I have, just wasn't really a great plan for me, because it really helped with the temperature control. You know, on a hot sunny day, when you're down here at the water, it's like 100 degrees. You come up just a little bit up into this area, I'm telling you, the temperature drops. It's just amazing how it just really creates sort of a nice cozy environment for us. Plus, they add a lot of character. We love the trees. They add a great amount of character. When we had purchased this tax parcel a few years ago, it was just a jungle down here. We had a lot of dead trees. We took out about 25, 26 trees. Most of them were dead, or they were impacting other trees that couldn't survive. So we cleared this whole area out, and then when we were looking at sinking the yard in, we realized that if we did that, we were going to disrupt the root system too much. And we could have done a couple of different things, but I ended up hiring an arborist who came out and gave us some great ideas and suggestions. Mainly, we stayed out of the drip line of the trees. They've been healthy. They've been thriving. They're doing fine. And again, they add great character and great coverage, so you can get shade, which is really nice on our hot days. We did what we needed to do as far as putting in some gravel in here. We didn't have a lot of this, you know, and the rocks, although for me it wasn't an ideal situation, but I have to say it hasn't been a problem for anybody. They're round, they're soft, they're okay to walk on. The kids are without shoes most of the summer anyways, so they get pretty tough. But then we were able to get some sand in, and it's interesting watching throughout the year the wave action, how it's shifted. Some days you come here and there's no rocks at all, it's just all sand, and then other days we'll get like a little pile of rocks here and a little pile of rocks there. So it's been really fascinating watching this area sort of evolving and changing over the year, depending on how high or low the lake level is. We wanted, you know, an area where we could sit and cook and stuff, which is a little, so much the issue here as far as the environment, but we really were able to get more use out of our yard. We had a really steep sloping yard, and so bringing this down, it gave us kind of a flatter area. Plus, I mean, you know, we can kick a ball around. It's fine. It works really great. And we find that people just gather in various locations, and it's just really worked well for us. I can say as far as the logistics of putting this together, I had a couple of visions of what I was looking for, and I really needed, somebody who was an architect to help me really solidify the plans. So we worked with the watershed company. We worked with Sea and Shore Construction on the construction of the bulkhead. During that period of time, I actually went to different rock quarries, and we handpicked out some of the larger rocks. We handpicked out this Madrona tree, actually had been part of the property, and we had saved that for a few years because we wanted to add some natural elements to it to make it feel like, you know, it wasn't fabricated. Like, these pieces were here beforehand. The cedar logs, they came from the owner of the rock quarry. He had found those on his property, and they've just been great because it creates a softer sort of feeling. You know, a lot of people think, oh, I'm putting all this big rock in. What's the difference between concrete? And I tell you, it creates a different shape, a different feeling. You have places to sit. The wood creates sort of a softer feeling to it. It's just been wonderful, and the kids find all sorts of fun little nooks and crannies and things to play and, you know, along the shore with all of the different elements that we've used. The permitting process was also an education, but as I have found, it's sort of an education on their side too. And the best thing I can recommend is be involved. As a homeowner, contacting the right people, saying, hey, where, you know, can you give me sort of info? Where is my permit at this stage of the game? What do I need to do to make this work? Our feeling was we had a lot of things to achieve, but we also knew there was a lot of restrictions. And because this is a protected area, there's a lot more restrictions coming. And our feeling was we just wanted to do the right thing. We wanted to gain some yard. We wanted to do the right thing for the fish and the birds and the trees and everything else. And we just wanted to work together to find a solution. So I said, tell me what my parameters are. I can work within those parameters. Going through the permit process, like I said, was an education because you have to deal with the Army Corps, you have to deal with your city, you have to deal with your feds, you have to deal with the state, you have to deal with the people who want the fish, the people who want the birds, there's a lot of different hands involved, and sometimes it's sort of a left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. That's why you have to stay involved. Call them, say, hey, how does it look? What sort of things do you need? How can I make this work so that I can get my permit through? The Army Corps was really interesting to work with. They were actually really good. I think sometimes it comes down to the person level. It depends on who you get, who's working with your permit. You know, again, my feeling is I just want to solve the problem. I don't want to create more of a hassle. What do I need to do to get this through? And how can I stay involved in the process? Give me an education. And, you know, sometimes it came down to just calling somebody and making sure that it got moved from their desk to somebody else's desk. And, you know, they really appreciated that. Like, for instance, our sewer line, which becomes a problem that I've heard more stories on the waterfront, how people have gone in and started digging before they realized they had a gravity-fed sewer line in their property, and it's usually an emergency call to the city to go and deal with it. Before we even had finished our plans, I went to the utilities, land use, and the sewer guys, and I said, here's our situation. What do you need? And they're like, have you broken ground yet? And I said, no. And they're like, you're actually calling us before you broke ground? And I said, yes. And they were very grateful because they were able to come in. They were able to inspect the pipe. They helped us learn how to bridge over that so that we didn't crush the pipe. They were able to come in and put a flush out valve into the sewer system as well so that, you know, a lot of these properties, their sewer line hasn't been looked at for years, you know, 10, 30, 40, sometimes 60, I mean, a lot of years. So for them to be able to get an opportunity to come in and, you know, look at what was under the ground to deal with problems before they became issues later on was really appreciated. And so I've just found if you just work with them and just be upfront and say, this is what I want to do, what do you need to make this happen? So that was great. Again, working with Watershed was wonderful. They gave us a great education. I'm still learning all my plant names. At first I was sort of hesitant to plant a lot of the stuff that we wanted, but it's never obstructed our view. It's never, obstructed the kids' play. Again, having three dogs, they trample through stuff pretty hard, and everything's really been very hardy. It's really lasted. Everything's just come in very nicely. It's low maintenance. We just love it. We're just really grateful to have this to create. So do you guys have any questions? Or yes, sir.
How much it cost you?
that's a good question. I don't know. No, just kidding. There's different phases that you have to go through. So your permits are going to cost something. You know, your drawings, just the architectural work before you actually even break ground. Getting the materials and then determining who your contractor is going to be, because we had plumbers, we had electricians, because we put in this whole area here with the lighting, bringing water in, you know, we put a shower in. So there was a lot of players in the game. Ballpark figure, I mean, it was a lot. It's not a small amount of money, but again, we had about 210 feet of property to work on. Plus, we went, you know, beyond the 10-foot barrier here and into the yard. We dropped this down 7 feet. I had an arborist come in. I mean, it was a very involved project. I would say we were north of $200,250, something like
that's
that.
That's good. I mean, that's not much. Mm-hmm.
For the amount of work that was done on this site, it's pretty amazing. I mean, this is obviously a matter of magnitude over and above most properties, most shoreline work. So it's
and it was a very rugged area that had not been touched for years. So there was a lot of pre-work we had to do to even get to the point where we could start building upon it. So it was a very involved process. And the ledge stone walls here and stuff, I tell you, the guys who did this, Scott Eckley Incorporated did this work. The guys who put this together, they are artists. They are amazing to watch. Each block, this is a dry stack wall. There's no mortaring or anything. And the way they put these puzzle pieces together was just really fascinating. They did a great job. And also along the bulkhead, we had a gentleman who was the rock setter, and watching him, it was just amazing. It was two guys, how they would place the rock and put them together. And he said sometimes he would have dreams at night where he just couldn't figure out how to get from here to there. And he knew every rock on his barge. And it was like it would come to him in the middle of the night. He would come back to work the next day, move two or three rocks, and suddenly a whole, you know, 20, 30 feet went in. It was a fun process watching it.
Was this all in place last year during the big storms? Was everything? Did you suffer any erosion or any damage?
No.
Those were pretty fierce storms.
Yes,
and
they were.
And it all survived.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was the one thing that was so great about this, because we did have erosion problems before. We did have a really steep property where the grass was not really in place. And again, over this area was just like a jungle. And so we finished the bulkhead work before April, mid-April, end of April of 2005. And then all the landscaping work after, we did hydro seed, not sod. And so the hydro seed took about 6 to 8 weeks to come in. And we were finished by mid-July probably. And we've had no problems whatsoever.
So it's been here for over 12 months.
Yes.
Okay. I have two questions. It sounds like you were really happy with sort of the sequence of how you did things, and you started with a consultant first that helped you with the design, and then you went to a contractor?
Yes, that's correct. I had sort of taken a drawing. I was, you know, taking my children's color pencils and drawing my own little sort of sketch of what I was trying to achieve. And I knew that there had to be a biological evaluation. I knew that there was something. If we were going to do this, I had to get the guys involved to do the biological evaluations before we went any further. And in doing that, I started talking with their architects and said, what can we and can't we do? Because those were the pieces of information I didn't have. So getting sort of the what can we and can't we do piece first, and then working with an architect where I gave him my drawings and I said, this is kind of what I have in mind. And then he took it and put it into the CAD drawings. And I actually sat in his office, and we'd changed lines around together and stuff like that. So it was a real collaborative process. The Sea and Shore Construction, I had worked with them in the past on some other projects. And so I had given them an opportunity to bid it out, and Waterfront Construction, because at the time they were pretty much the only two on the lake that were kind of doing this sort of work. They both came back with very comparable estimates. Again, having worked with Sea and Shore before, I sort of knew their style. And again, I was comfortable with the people because, like I said, things are going to go wrong. And you've got to find somebody that you can work with when they do go wrong and who's going to follow through and solve the problem. And so I talked with the City of Bellevue before I did anything.
And my other question is, now that you've had this in for over a year, would you do anything differently? And if so, what?
There would be minor things I would do differently, and they really don't deal with the 10-foot span on the waterfront here. I would change the fireplace orientation and have it facing that way so I could see out. Little things like that, I can't really say there's anything we would change because it's just worked so well. Having this space down here where we can sit and let the kids play, and I can't tell you how many sand shapes have been built here, you know, and just, and then having the steps over there, you guys will be able to see that, just, you know, we'll have a group of people here and just seeing the people scattered along the steps, just, there's nothing that I really think I would change other than little nuances like, you know, changing the orientation of the fireplace, things that really don't impact the bulkhead. I don't think there's anything I'd change.
So if there weren't these trees here that you were trying to protect, would you like to see a larger beach area, or is this about right?
You know, ideally, we were looking for a little bit more of that. Initially, like I said, we wanted to drop this down, all of this almost 7 feet down, so that the whole stretch here would have this sort of, you know, water to beach to yard access. But, you know, and also achieving a little flatter yard. We have a lot of challenges living on a hill, basically. And so it was, how do we do the right thing with the hill? And also then cost plays a big factor in that. And I knew we weren't going to achieve the big flat sport court sort of yard. And kicking a ball, like I said, sometimes is challenging because it rolls down the hill. But I really didn't want to get rid of the trees. And so it was just trying to find a way. I mean, for this fir tree here to be attached in the bulkhead like it is, you don't see them thriving on the water like this. It's such a unique tree that we really wanted to keep it. And so we just had to work around them. I could have taken them out and we could have dropped this thing down 7 feet and had a super flat yard from here to there and a real gradual sort of, you know, entrance all along here. But I really don't think it has as much character for what we were looking for.
My question for you is, but also for you, how do you quantify the benefit? In other words, I understand the benefit to you. You know, you've got this gradient and the kids can go in, and I have an old dog too, and I appreciate all that.
Right.
But how, if you want to look at the numbers and say, before this was done, whatever the measure is, it was X, and now after it's done, it's Y, and Y is better than X. I'm really interested in the science of it, of how you know what's better and what's worse. I mean, visually, it looks great.
Right.
But how do you know it's better?
Are you talking, like, in terms of property value
Here's the deal. Here's the deal. The reason we're here is because of the Shoreline Master Program. And so the Department of Ecology and others who are involved in that have some requirements that things get better. That's not the term that they use. They actually use a different term. And I'm not using their term. I asked Ecology as well. How do you quantify it? So for you as the consultant on this and for you as the owner, how is it quantified that this is better? It's clearly better for you. I mean, there's no question about that. But unfortunately, that doesn't matter when it comes to the Shoreline Master Program, the way I read it. As a matter of fact, it's silent on property owners and the benefit to you. It really talks about everything but that. So how's it quantified?
It's somewhat subjective because there's no, like, quantifiable number, you know, that you can put towards this besides the saying, okay, we removed, you know, 20 feet or feet of linear bulkhead and we replaced it with more of a sinuous line of natural shoreline. Maybe those are quantifiable numbers, but other than that, it's pretty much subjective. But you can say that
beforehand, if in 04 you'd counted and you saw, you talked about turtles, so I'll use that, right? If before you'd counted and you saw X turtles over a Y period of time, and now you see Z turtles over A period of time, okay, maybe that's better if more turtles are better. But I'm trying to get at the quantification of it, because no question this looks great. But I don't understand how to quantify it.
Well, again, I think Dan's right. I mean, it is a subjective thing. I don't think everyone would have chosen to do what we did,
right,
and they would have had different reasons,
right,
and they had different restrictions and limitations. Again, we had 210 feet of waterfront to work with, so it was a huge project, and to be able to make some of the significant changes that we did, we wouldn't have been able to do that in, like you said, a 10 or 20-foot bulkhead. In fact, our neighbors here, they want to get rid of their concrete bulkhead as well, and they're in the process of trying to figure that out, too, because not only do they want to sort of mesh with what's happening throughout here, but it's impacting their yard up there. For us, I think that was one of the biggest things. We had a sinkhole in our yard. We had a sewer pipe that was exposed. So our purposes for improving it and changing it were those reasons. We got the added benefit of having this really awesome yard. Our property values have gone up.
Right.
Our resale value for this property has gone up because before it was not a usable space in a homeowner's viewpoint.
Hey, I'm on your side.
I think you can put some quantifiable numbers to piers and docks. I mean, that's one example you can do. For those types of that type of work, you can say, okay, we have improved the amount of light that may be entering underneath the dock by doing, you know, X, or, you know, by reducing the width. There are measures with, like, docks and overwater structures that you can improve.
So what factor? So what? I understand. Okay, so what? You've done that, and I agree with you. Quantifying is good, because this is all supposed to be based on science. So I agree with what you said.
There are,
and it looks great. It really looks good.
Well, it depends. Is it the environment? Is it the property owner and the land use? Is it the city?
In the Shoreline Master Program,
assessment?
The property owner
is
has
it,
very little benefit
at all. And there's measurable habitat.
Yeah.
There is
right.
a habitat that...
Right.
I mean, there are requirements that juvenile salmon need, and one of the main things is having shallow water habitat. And that, you know, Dan pointed out in his slideshow, as juveniles come in, if they have to go out into deep water, they're constantly being yeah. preyed upon.
Yeah.
So you can clearly show that there is habitat provided. And, you know, it's a sort of chicken and the egg. Sometimes if you have one property, one lone wolf, you are a pioneer out here. So people might not say, well, where are all the fish? But as it, I love how your neighbor is now thinking of doing it. And as we create a whole system of returning the lake back to more natural conditions, then is when I think you're going to start to see more improvements. And it takes time.
Were these both docks were here before, or did you add any?
Yes, sir. Both of the docks were here before. We resurfaced them with a Trex deck years ago. You know, there were no improvements made on them during this project. They were here and existing.
Mm-hmm. In your permit for this project, was it separate from the house? Did you build a house at the same time?
No, sir. That house was built, I think, in the 30s, 38.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then this house here was built, I think, probably 10 or 15 years prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, the structures were there.
So did you hire a company to just get the permits?
No, sir. I did all the permitting myself. I worked with Dan, who had to do the biological evaluations, because it's quite an involved process. There's a lot of pieces, and I am not a biologist. So there's certain pieces I had to gather from other people, but then I brought the permits in. And
did you draw this up yourself?
Like I said, I kind of sketched things on some paper, but then they, you know, I don't have a machine that's going to do CAD drawings for me, so there's certain blueprints, certain specifics that had to be put in place. For instance, when we had to dig down here and do the different layerings to get not only the dissipation of the wave action, but then to keep this so that there was no erosion, those sort of pieces and parts, I'm not going to be able to draw that. I understand how it works. I can see it, but I'm not going to be the expert who's going to draw that out to get the other people on the other side of the permitting process to say, okay, you're meeting all these particular guidelines. They helped me figure out what the guidelines were, what needed to be done. They helped me with the drawings and then, you know, the specifics on that. And then, you know, I put them in by hand, and then I met each of the people that were going to be involved in the permitting process.
Now, since the water is so shallow, did you attempt to extend your docks further out?
No, sir. And at that point, it's shallow now, but I'll tell you, when the lake level is down really far, when it's up, it comes in beyond this point up here. So the water will come all the way up to here, yes.
So you can get any size, whatever your size.
Yeah, you know, it drops off really quickly. I mean, at the end of the dock, it's probably 30 or 40 feet down there.
Okay,
yeah.
I have a piece of property, and I'm going to build this type of a thing. So I guess, how do you get started?
Figure out what I went through the pros and cons list and met with my husband and said, well, what do we want? We want a yard. You know, do we want to cut the trees down? If so, which trees are we cutting down? Did we want, you know, for us, we wanted the little patio, we wanted the outdoor shower. There were specific little things like that. So I basically put together sort of the items list, if you will, and then I took our survey maps, because I went and got a survey of both of the tax parcels, and then I just started actually tracing over them and just drawing ideas, and I knew I wanted a yard, because we had no yard really before. I mean, it was steep, it was rugged, it was just totally overgrown. And so we knew that there were certain things that we wanted. And then it just, like I said, it kind of evolved. Once we started breaking ground and we knew we couldn't go beyond the drip line, it was like, well, we can't go 7 feet down on everything here. It will kill the trees. We had, you know, a few different drawings before we ended up with the final drawing.
But, I mean, this is very creative. Did you come up with the idea of doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. But you know, I work together with a lot of people, and it, you get ideas from each other, and then it was like, well, what if we do this? And it's like, oh yeah, well, I think we can do that, and it just it evolves.
Without further ado, everyone, this is Julian Durant of, is it called the Hendrikus Group or Hendrikus Robbins?
The Hendrikus Group.
The Hendrikus Group, okay.
This project, we had at least three major goals that we had, broad goals. One of them was, of course, to work with the shoreline in a way that was environmentally friendly, good for people, good for animals, good for wildlife habitat. But at the same time, we had a long slope that everybody just came down on. Most of us walked down. Some of us took the tram. And it was in a critical area. And so the other goal was to, how can we create an access way that is environmental friendly, that can be permitted? And so we have some information for you about that. And then the third major goal we have is, how could we design and build this so that it could be maintained completely organically? So really, this was a whole, we fuse all those three goals together. In the photographs you see, the original condition was this straight bulkhead. Highly attractive, wasn't it? Pretty low, definitely failing. And when we met the clients, they had, you know, many of the similar concerns. At first, when they heard that we were going to take away a little bit of their lawn areas, they were a little hesitant at first. But when they really began to understand that the way that this could be designed is going to really increase their use and safety and enjoyment of this whole area, then they really became on board with the whole idea. So you can see in the first page, they had a long grass area, a large grass area. It was very monotonous. There was no interest at all, no reason to really bring you down into the waterfront area. And then if you go to the second page, what we have is three photographs that show some examples during the process of construction. The constructing a waterfront, it's quite a task. It's very enjoyable. It can be a little complicated. The equipment is something that's worthwhile noting. I know that Dan mentioned the use of barges. Working with barges is sometimes an art form and sometimes it's just business. It's kind of a combination. In this case, the large photograph, you see at this point we basically had just the stones. Most of the stones were placed. Behind the stones, we did a lot of work with soils. We find that on waterfronts, the type of soils that you use makes an enormous difference. Why does it make an enormous difference? It's good to have soils that are non-erodible. It's possible to actually engineer soils that don't erode, that grow plants exceedingly well, and that also have a high degree of nutrient cycling. That's a fancy word for just soils that help manufacture their own nutrients, so you don't have to fertilize them very much. So that's very handy. The soils also is a major part in being able to design and develop landscapes and gardens that can be maintained easily and organically without any of the toxins, pesticides, and herbicides, insecticides that you normally would see. Also, the use of soils behind rockeries. A lot of times people end up using just quarry spalls, and they do that because they're non-eroding, of course. It's the typical thing that is used, but it's possible to engineer them in combinations with geotextile fabrics so that you actually put some good soils right behind some of the stones. Then if you go to the next page, actually one more thing on the second page, the upper right hand corner is showing this maple tree right here, and Dan mentioned a couple things about working next to trees. It's a really important aspect, certainly for waterfronts. In here there's special techniques that we needed to use in order to take away the original bulkhead, insert some of the new stones, and some of the techniques, some of the techniques really involved how to preserve the hair roots on trees. The hair roots are roots a lot of times that you can't see. I don't know how many people are familiar with them, but if you expose a lot of the root system, there's these little tiny hair-like roots that are so fragile, but it's these hair roots that absorb all the nutrition. So there's these little techniques, highly technical, like if it's in a cool day or a day that's getting a little bit warmer, you put wet burlap on it. You keep it cool. Ways of keeping your excavator, your machine so far away. There's different types of machines that you can use. Anyway, it's really fun. There's all kinds of techniques you can use. And this was just a picture that will help people to appreciate that, yes, this is something you really need to take in consideration. Then in the last page, it shows you afterwards, actually these photographs were taken not too long ago, and it really shows you the difference between when you have just the bones, meaning the stones, say, in the soil, and now you put in the plants. Plants really help to fill in the picture. They help to complete it. And the plants, of course, all the other reasons that people are aware of now, the fact that they give nutrition, they help provide insects. One of the things that's really interesting, I'm going to tie the plants back into the soil just for a minute, is that when you have a good quality organic soil that is highly permeable and tends not to, you know, get stale or anaerobic, what happens is it has a lot of microbiology in the soil. What does that do? The microbiology helps to create, well, you know, the food web that everybody talks about and has learned in grade school, the big things eat the little things and the little things eat the smaller things. Well, in the soil, you have the bacteria and the fungi eat the bacteria, and then the microarthropods eat the fungi, and then you've got worms and other critters that eat the insects. So it, the bottom line is, when you have a good quality soil, it helps to create the insect population that the salmon are going to like. So it's all tied in together. What you do with the stones, what you do with the soil, what you do with the plants, how you maintain it, it's all kind of one integrated system. You'll notice here we had, this was an existing log that we moved. We wanted to integrate it more into the rockery. In this case, there were some particular wave action things that we wanted to accomplish so that there are some stones that were actually put out into the water slightly. And there are some stones also that you can't see that were put out into the water. And so likewise, there was a treatment of the gravel bed to help for salmon spawning. And for those who want to take the tram, and I bet some people would like to take the tram going up as opposed to walking up, we call that a living trail. And it's called a living trail because there is a soil that's used that's in the trail itself that can actually grow plants, and it still will conduct rain. Rain will still flow through it. And I have a handout for anybody who's interested. I have a handout on the living trail and what it means. And then for those of you who are interested in permitting, we thought it might be of interest. We have a handout that has some of the questions that were asked to get the variance that we needed to put in the trail. Because on the steep slopes, period, but now you have a steep slope actually within the shoreline management jurisdiction. Now you have a double whammy in terms of what to do with it. So we had to get a variance even to put in those steps that went down. And so the handout I have describes some of the things that we had to do. It narrates what it is that we did. Basically, the steps themselves needed to follow the contours very well. They have a particular use of soil that I already covered. The very, very top segment was a aluminum steps, and they it's kind of like docks in the way. They're open, they allow light to penetrate, they allow rain to penetrate. They're only anchored in at certain points so that there's very little ground disruption. Anyway, so we have a handout on that as well. So I think it might be a good time for questions. I don't know how we're doing for time.
Just, yep. You mentioned you used a fabric.
Do you need a microphone?
We'll start with questions here, and then we'll move them actually into there.
You used a fabric behind the rockery, and for some of our properties, we may have muskrat problems where we've already had sinkholes that, you know, you come out and you have something. What happens if you use a fabric? Can you keep the fabric there beyond the installation of the rock? Does that keep the muskrats from burrowing under your lawn and getting your weekly sinkholes, or what happens with that?
The right kind of fabric installed in the right way will prevent your sinkholes from happening. Okay. So there's many different kinds of fabrics. What I'm not talking about is the weed fabric that you might find at like Home Depot or Lowe's. I'm not talking about that. The fabrics that we used here, they're engineered fabrics, are called geotextile fabrics. They're non-woven or they're woven. They're ultraviolet resistant, they're very long lasting, they're tested according to various properties, tensile strength and whatnot, so they're really strong. Now muskrats are interesting. When we've run into muskrats or rodents or mountain beavers, things like that, sometimes what we'll do is we'll put in a whole different type of fabric, in this case is not even fabric, we'll sometimes put in metal mesh. because they have these nasty ways of getting through things. The geotechnical fabrics have not been tested for muskrat proof. Okay. We have a project right now that's in Ballard, and they're really concerned about mountain beavers because they're actually drilling all these holes. They're digging all these holes, and they're helping to erode their slope. And so we're putting in, actually, a metal chain. Mm-hmm. They won't get through that.
The other thing I was wondering about was the bridge above your living bridge. Is that aluminum step coated with a particular material that you could use on your whole dock? This appears to be Trex. What's the preferred material for lakeside or lake docks in Lake Washington? What do you prefer us to use if we have to repair our docks?
Well, for lake docks, Debbie, is you better answering that question?
I think you're the best for it.
Hi, folks. My name is Kitty Nelson, and I work at NOAA, so I review a lot of the dock permit applications, and what we like to see come in are docks that pass light through their surface so that there aren't these sharp shade lines that Dan showed in his presentation. And the reason for that is that the fish, when they're migrating along the shoreline, do react to the sharp shade lines, and it does force them out into more areas where there's a greater number of predators. And the idea is to sort of be as invisible as you can in terms of what you put over the water. So if you can get grating or the ironwood, spaced wood, those are the best forms of dock surface treatments.
In this situation, they've added stone into the water. Can we make our lakeside property more comfortable for everybody by adding large boulders and stones? Do we have to go through a permitting process? You have nice stones coming out, making little coves for fish and things. How formal do we have to go to just demand?
Well, basically, you should go through the permitting process.
Is that a permitting?
Yes.
Adding a rock in the water.
You definitely
is
have to go
yes.
through the permitting process.
Okay.
Not of ordinary high water permit.
And it's actually very specific. What stones do in relationship to fish and eggs and their habitat is very specific. It really is.
And the size of the boulders, and that's something that, the size of the rocks, and that's something that's confusing to people, is they're larger flat rocks, but the problem with things like riprap, and Dan had mentioned this where he showed some larger boulders, is that they're perfect habitat for predators that like to lurk in there, mm-hmm. Like sculpin especially. They like to hide in the riprap and rocks that are piled up like that, as opposed to larger, flatter, more openly spaced yeah. rocks like that. There's not a hiding spot.
If you have larger rocks out in deeper water, that's also a concern because that also provides that same habitat for those predators to be present.
So you want flat rocks.
Just want to avoid the, flatter rocks or smaller rocks, can be, are not as bad, obviously, as the larger materials that can be present.
But one kind of related question.
Microphone?
These rocks that you put in the water, the property does have a sort of a water line or high water line, right? So is everything on not the water side, on the other side, can you put rocks outside of the property line? Or is everything inside the water line? Does that make sense?
Are you talking about, can you put it above ordinary high water line?
No, I mean on the water side. Can you put rocks in the water beyond the property line? Or is everything
outside the property permitting. Line in the water? It's a specific permit case that you need to take up. Typically, the answer is no. But you need to take, there are variances and there is some flexibility.
So, like here, is everything on the property line and you just mm-hmm. dug into the property
yep.
to make this happen?
What's the definition of ordinary high water line, I guess, is probably what we're trying to get to. Ordinary high water line, I understand, is a legal term. The lake goes up and down. Where is the ordinary high water line? Is it by the month or is it a line set at one time of the year?
People take averages and there's different ways of calculating it.
Okay.
on Lake Washington, it's a known
ordinary high water mark is basically a known value because the Corps of Engineers maintains a certain elevation at the locks. And so there, on Lake Washington, we know what the elevation is for the ordinary high water mark. Now, on a situation like Lake Sammamish, where it's more of a naturally, you know, natural hydrograph on the lake, where it's, you know, higher in the winter and lower in the summer, there you have more of a variable ordinary high water mark that's dependent, that location is dependent upon, you know, where vegetation is, more water-loving vegetation versus upland vegetation, and changes in soil dynamics.
But this goes up and down.
Yeah, Lake Washington is
this
lower
goes
than
up
it,
way well, up and down.
It does, but it's controlled by the locks.
Yeah, it's controlled.
If you're going to do anything to your shoreline, you should basically pursue the permit.
Okay.
That's the bottom line.
Rocks need
it is.
Permits.
And, you know, and usually, just for the purpose of your own consideration,
sure.
The high water mark is almost all the time visible. It leaves a sign. And it's controlled by the Army Corps. But how you calculate it and look at it and seasonally, yes, all that's important when you're actually doing a design for it.
Okay, very good.
You need to know how low it's going to get, how high it's going to get,
mm-hmm.
and also in relationship to storms. What's a 50-year storm height going to give you?
Okay.
Actually, I want to just mention two things. When we were describing vertical wall bulkheads earlier and how it makes it scours out at the base, and so it makes the water deeper. And do you notice how there's a nice, gradually sloping shoreline now, which is so fabulous? They have young children and a dog, but in addition to being great for kids, it's essential for fish habitat, especially for juvenile salmon. But to create that, even though they were within their permit, they actually had to add gravel, and they had to fill in that area because it was so deep and scoured out. And when you do that, every property is going to be different. You might have to replenish that supply because since it's not eroding off a slope, it's not naturally going to be creating that. So you might have to maintain it over a few years just as, you know, you have to maintain your yard, you have to maintain your core. But that is something on a case-by-case basis that might happen. But the great net effect is having that nice shallow shoreline. And did you have a comment on that?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay. Got the microphone. Someone made the comment, what does this have to do with fish? And if I could leave you with four or five things today. When you're dealing with your property, what the federal government is looking for is a shallow gradient on your shoreline. In other words, we don't like to see steep drop-offs. Small substrate size, sand or small gravel. Minimize, you know, large rock like this because of the predator issue. Bulkheads out of the water or rockeries out of the ordinary high water line as much as possible and out of the splash zone, because when boats go by, they make wakes. Those wakes go up on the beach and go higher than the ordinary high water line and splash. So you get erosion from those wakes. So try to get any kind of a rockery or retaining wall as far away from that ordinary high water line and make a shallow sloped beach. And then the last thing is vegetation that hangs over the water, like you saw at the Baxter place, and you see this lovely tree here, drops leaf litter, insects into the water, and if the vegetation is growing right at the water line, sometimes the root systems will provide hiding places for juvenile fish. And although you don't see them migrating in roots normally, they do use those systems for avoiding predators like diving birds, you know, or, you know, other predators. They will run into those, that complex root system, and seek shelter. So those five things, when you're dealing with your shoreline, will get you a long ways in the federal part of the permitting process.
Why are salmon so important? You know, there's hundreds of animals around here and fish. Why is there so much emphasis on what the salmon do or the habitat for them and less emphasis on, you know, the ducks and all the other fish that are in the water?
It's a good question, and the reason that there's a lot of emphasis on Chinook in particular is because it is a species that's listed under the Endangered Species Act. And steelhead, which also use this water body, are up also for, they're proposed for listing. So, like I think was mentioned in the presentation, when
when you have an ecosystem that is in trouble, these animals start declining in numbers, and that's when the federal system kicks in and starts to say, what's going on? What are we doing here? How can we do things better? Many of the fish species in Lake Washington are non-native species and have been added to the system, like the smallmouth bass and the largemouth bass and a lot of the sculpins. There's about, help me with this, maybe 15, 20 different species of non-native fishes in the lake, and they do prey on the salmon. So we try to weight things in favor of the salmon to give them a break so they can bring their numbers back. And also we work with the habitat to try to make it more friendly to the salmon so that we get a better functioning system.
I've noticed that the bass seem to hide in those non-native water lilies, the ones with the white flowers. So would that be a good, and if the bass prey on the salmon, would that be like a good reason to try and get rid of the prevalence of that plant?
Yes. Non-native species do tend to favor the non-native fishes. Largemouth bass, you know, inhabit these water lilies. And you notice there's two kinds of water lilies. There's a white-flowered one and a yellow-flowered one. Well, the white-flowered one is the non-native kind, and it's the kind that's more prevalent around the water. The yellow-flowered one is your native, and it tends to be smaller in area. But if you can somehow remove those water lilies and the milfoil, the non-native plants that live in the water, then it's more natural for native species to be able to survive in.
The bass are doing great at my house.
So I thought the comments at today's meeting were just great about cooperating with other jurisdictions to try to get a handle on how you deal as a Washington community in dealing with the non-native invasive plant species. And I applaud any efforts you will make as a city to do that.
I do want you to look up and notice the slope from here. It's really incredible that you can't even detect, you can't see the stairs or the tram, and that's really unique because many of the other properties on there, the trams are sort of, you know, like going up to Snoqualmie Pass. They're this huge track where they've clear cut the whole slope, and that's where we're talking about low impact development. This is an example of how you are developing, you're building stairs and access, but you're limiting your impacts on there. So it's all about achieving balance, you know, allowing some development, but doing it maybe in a different fashion. As you notice, there's vegetation that are spilling down over the rocks, and there's some nice snowberry and ferns all within the cove here, and the owner said for them that made all the difference in the world, because when they saw it, an initial reaction homeowners have sometimes when they build a cove is this whole debate about, are you giving up property when you build a cove? But they had a lawn that was completely underused, and they had this big chunk, and they first saw it unvegetated, and they thought, oh no, have we ruined our property? And then they saw how usable it was, and when the plants started coming in, they were so excited. It just became this warm, inviting spot that they fell in love with it a million times over. So these plants aren't necessarily natives, and you could use other options. You could use beech strawberry. You can use wood sorrel. They're different options, but the point is that you're mixing vegetation around the rocks, along the shoreline to provide habitat, and to tie the whole design together.
You would not believe how much technology there is out right now. There's biological technology, there's new soil technology, there's new ways of delivering and installing soil and materials. It's totally awesome. You can now, we've given some plants it looks like a little horse capsule. And it's about this big, and it's literally filled with dormant microorganisms and various minerals. And we've been able to cure plants from diseases just by putting in one of these pills. Anyway, it's really fun what's available right now. And the relevance to the waterfront property is important because you have issues like sedimentation. Actually, the word soil, when you do permitting work and when you start talking to engineers, is, man, that's a red flag. Soil, fill, use the word fill and the red flags go up. And why is that? A lot of times the fill or the soils that you're using have a lot of fines in it. They're very erodible. You sprinkle some water on it and it ruts and rills right into the water. And so that's one of the reasons they're so concerned, is because of the turbidity of the water or the sedimentation in the water. Salmon and salmon eggs hate silts. It kills them, it smothers them, clogs their gills. So choose your soil well, find places that you can work with it, you can design it, have a soil so it has very low, if hardly any sedimentation on it, and is all organic. And so it works so well with water for crops.